Well, maybe we should ask Dr. Hanan. By the way, he's dealing with load shedding as well. I said my cables got stolen outside my house this weekend. Well, he's dealing with it. You're in the car?
I mean, where else? I mean, my office is way too dark, unless you just want to hear me and not see me.
What a rahmonis. You have to sit in your car.
Here he is. That's funny.
Here he is, the best psychologist in Joburg, and he's sitting in his car like a homeless person. All right, Dr. Hanan. So listen, we can go into the thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and maybe we can get to that because James has got a question. This is our James here in the office. But screw him. Who cares about James's problems? I want to address this thing of, like, I was just saying to Leanne, if you're a rich person or if you're the richest person in your family, forget about being the rich person. Let's just say that you have an extra 5,000 rand that the rest of your family doesn't have. And they all start coming to your door and begging you for money. This is a big problem. And there may be people listening to us right now who are dealing with it this morning. You don't have a lot, but someone has less than you in your family. And now suddenly they see you as Father Christmas.
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens in a lot of families where suddenly you have more than a family member. You know, parents have been looking after you. Siblings have been supporting you. Maybe your children have been supporting you. Suddenly you have more than you've had before, and now they feel entitled to a piece of it. On a consequential level, you got to set healthy boundaries with people, because human nature, if you set a precedence and you give, then people want more because they assume that you are the tap that keeps on giving, or the gift that keeps on giving. So setting boundaries, healthy boundaries for you is vital for the ongoing relationship. Remember, you're setting precedents, you're setting dynamics, you're setting patterns and expectations. So if you're going to give, just assume that this is something that you're going to continuously do. And if you're happy with it, then go for it. But if you're not happy, then set the rules of the game from the start.
Well, I mean, this is also interesting because a lot of people feel almost an obligation, right, to help someone because their family, and every family has one. Every family has some charity case that we have to help along, right? And sometimes that person starts to expect that is your responsibility. So they may be an adult who actually has a job or has a pension or has something. And then it becomes everyone else in the family's job to look after that person, which doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. You don't want to become an enabler. You don't want to assume the responsibility of the one that takes charge, and suddenly you enable the person to stop working hard for them. You just understand that you're under the risk of victimizing someone, because when you keep on giving and they keep on taking, then there's no reason for them to step up, step out of comfort zones, do more. So just ensure that you understand that that once off that you think is out of kindness, and it could be out of kindness, could actually make them weaker in the long run. Like the whole story of, you know, to give somebody a fish versus teach them how to fish. The moment you give something, just make them lazier.
All right. So Dr. Hanan, here's the question from James. And I actually think this is a good question. Otherwise I would have, you know, mostly things come from James I ignore. But here we go. He says, there's a certain percentage of people that believe depression isn't real. And you know that there are people who think this. People who think that depression is just, you know what? That's called being a human. And depression is something, it's a circumstantial thing that you should feel depressed when someone in your family dies, or, you know, you feel enormous financial strain, or you've got a health concern and it's driving you to the point where you can't stop thinking about it. So there's that question. And what is the difference between a mental illness and just having a tough time in life when it comes to depression? Because a lot of people get onto antidepressants, but maybe they're just going through a tough time, and it's probably important for them to feel some of those negative emotions. We've got to a stage in society, and this is why I think this is a great question from James. We've got to a stage in society now where when anyone deals with any difficulty at all in a first world scenario, they go, oh my God, I need to medicate this. How do you deal with that as a professional?
So there are many aspects to the term depression or mental illness, and we can slice it in many different ways. But I'm not a fan of labeling anybody in a way that's unhelpful to them. It's depression and anxiety is such a loose term now that it's kind of diluted its meaning. Everybody goes around and saying, oh, I'm so depressed. Everybody's going around and saying, I'm so anxious. I mean, how many times in the day do you hear your friends and colleagues and people, you know, on social media going, I'm so anxious? You don't hear people going around saying, oh my God, I'm so diabetic. So with medical disorders, it doesn't fly. But with psychological disorders, suddenly everybody's an expert on all these labels. And I have an issue of labeling yourself in ways that is unhelpful to you. I'm a real stickler for definitions. What does it mean when somebody says when somebody says I'm depressed? What does it mean? When somebody says I'm anxious, what does it mean? Because it could mean a billion different things. That's a difference, by the way, between psychologically diagnosing yourself versus medically diagnosing yourself. So for example, if you say I'm diabetic, everybody knows what that means. There's clear, defined definitions for what it means to be diabetic. And if you step out of those definitions, you're no longer diabetic. But with psychological diagnoses, it's so general and it's so fluffy and it's not really well defined that anybody that suddenly didn't sleep well, or they had a bad phone call, or their boss shouted at them, or they saw something on social media that they didn't agree with, suddenly they fall into the category of depression. And who can argue with them? Because I dare you to go to them and say you are not depressed. You know, so we kind of diluted this term. And the difference between kind of normal, let's call it, feelings versus mental disorders, the way I would define it is if there is great friction between where you are and where you want to be, that means there's something there that needs to be resolved. I don't want to give it a label. It could be maybe an old pattern. It could be a relationship that gets in the way. It could be a habit that you got to break. It could be a fundamental core belief that you have that stops you from getting from point A to point B. But I would caution anybody. I would caution anybody to label themselves in any way that's unhelpful to them. And I want to give you an analogy, which I think will make this clearer.
Just say that again. And I think it bears repeating. There are probably some people who are listening for the first time this morning, and they make this mistake. I have too. Don't label yourself with something that's going to be unhelpful. Don't give yourself some kind of disability that you don't have.
Well, don't give yourself the title that makes it even more difficult for you to get from point A to point B. If you're going to label yourself...
By the way, Doc, I mean, I just want to expand that, if you don't mind, and you can correct me. I'm not the professional. You are. I want to expand that by saying, don't think you're a victim. If you're not, don't assume the mantle of victimhood just because it's cool on social media, because what you're doing is you're telling your brain and you're telling your system that you are designed to be less than, not to be better than.
Yeah. Well, to your point, Gareth, being a victim enables you to stop in your comfort zone. So it gives you permission to go and stop and not expand, not develop, not improve, not adapt, because I've got a reason for where I am. It's because of my genetic makeup. It's because of mom. It's because of dad. It's because of my childhood. Let me tell you, everybody's got a story. Everybody can connect the dots backwards and find reasons and justifications for why they should not succeed, why they should be in a bad relationship, why they should be addicts. Everybody can connect the dots backwards in that way. Right. And I would advise and suggest it to anybody to not go backwards and connect the dots and justify why you are where you are, but rather look for solutions to make yourself better. So going back to don't label yourself in any ways that make you worse. If I take my car to a mechanic and the car's broken, mechanic one doesn't diagnose the problem. Mechanic two diagnoses the problem, but very generally goes, well, the car's broken. Mechanic three diagnoses the problem specifically and he goes, well, the car's broken because the right front tire is flat. Mechanic one that doesn't diagnose the problem cannot fix it. Mechanic two that diagnoses the problem very generally cannot fix it. It's an illusion of a diagnosis. Because yes, it's true, the car's broken, but what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything, and it doesn't empower the person to go and deal with it. The only one that can actually go and fix the problem is the one that labeled it specifically in helpful ways. Because once I know the right front tire is flat, I can create a framework to go and deal with the actual problem. And we do exactly the same things in our lives. So we go, well, I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, but what does it mean? I'm anxious. Okay, fine, but what does it mean? I'm insecure, I'm frustrated. Let me ask you, Gareth, if a friend came up to you and said, Gareth, I need your advice, I am anxious, what would be your first question to them? Maybe not you, Leanne. Leanne.
Bad idea.
Leanne, if a friend came up to you and said to you, Leanne, I need your honest advice, I am sad, what would be your first question to them?
What are you sad about?
Exactly. You wouldn't just accept I'm sad, because that's unhelpful. And if they said to you, I can't tell you what I'm sad about, well, you will go, well, we are stuck. Let's go figure out exactly what is the thing, and let's label it accurately so we can create a framework to go and deal with the actual problem. But for some reason in our lives, we kind of accept I'm sad and we leave it as is. I'm anxious and we leave it as is. We give these generalized statements or these generalized diagnoses, which leaves us completely helpless and disempowered.
I love that answer. Okay, I think there are a lot of people who are going to benefit from just what you've said now. And look at Dr. Leanne Moll here with all the right answers. So we were basically diagnosed the other day with being the third most miserable country in the world. I don't know if you saw this survey. I wonder what it is that makes us miserable. And I mean, we've got lots of circumstantial reasons, but there are a lot of countries with huge trouble. I mean, don't tell me we're more miserable than Afghanistan. Don't tell me we're more miserable than Iraq or Syria, which are actually in the midst of a war. Why do you think South Africa did so badly on the most miserable countries on the world survey? That was on the 18th of March.
So again, what does it mean we are the third most miserable country in the world? Miserable when it comes to comparing to what and to who? I don't even know what that
I don't know. Apparently, we're also the fourth fattest country, and I mean, we could have to do with, like, we don't have electricity and water half the time. That could be a big part of the problem.
But you know what? That's exactly my point. So look, if I told you, Gareth, look, Gareth, you are depressed, right? So I diagnose you, right? I give you a label, you're depressed. And I want you now to go back and look for reasons of why I'm right. I call this go fishing. And people can always go and find reasons for why they have the label they have. If I say to you, Gareth, you're anxious, and I want you to go back into your history and find out reasons why that's right, well, you'll find a million reasons and a million ways to connect the dots. And I can do this thing if I say, Gareth, you are grateful, or you are happy, or you're excited. You can do exactly the same thing again.
I got a problem with you. We've only got like a minute to go until 7, Dr. Hanan. You were meant to come to our event on Wednesday. What the hell happened to you? I didn't see you in the crowd. Did you sneak in and sneak out again?
Jeez, you know what? I'm such a big fan of Douglas Murray. It's just suddenly came up. I had to stay late to work. I would have loved to, but I saw that.
You know what? You have no integrity. I don't want to talk to you ever again.
Trace the dots backwards.
At it with you.
There's always something.
I've got reasons. Let me tell you about my childhood. Hold on. Let me just tell you about my childhood.
The last invitation you ever get from me.
Let me tell you about my childhood.
Who's got the time?
My genetic makeup and my
All right, so that's it.
You think you have it bad? Wait. Let me tell you about my background.
All right, so basically you're one of those people who says, yes, I'm coming, and you don't pitch.
Yeah. I can't believe you looked for me.
I was there.
You were busy.
I was there. I scanned the crowd. I didn't see you.
I said goodbye. You were just drunk. Okay. You were just drunk.
Bullshit. What a lie. That's called projection. All right. Thank you, Doc.
Thanks, guys.
How's that? He just didn't pitch. How's that? Invite the guy and he doesn't pitch up. Your psychologist. Monday morning. Talk about unreliable. All right. Very good.